Welcome to another edition of Razor Wire. Now, today we're going to be talking all things cyber mercenaries. We're going to be talking about how things are done in the underground, about nation states paying off criminal groups in order to engage in activities that are plausible deniability associated with it, whether or not there's kind of almost legitimized cyber mercenary groups and feasibly what they do and how they work. It's going to be an interesting set of subject matters that we're going to be talking about. I have Ian and Chris, my beloved co-hosts, who are going to be here having a chat with me about exactly this. And let's see if we can get to the bottom of how this all works.
Welcome to the Razorwire podcast, where we discuss all things in the information security and cybersecurity world. From current events and trends through to commentary from experts in the field, providing vital advisory on what it is to work in the information security and cybersecurity space.
Today, as I just mentioned, we're going to be talking about cyber mercenaries, the criminal gang side of things, the fact that nation states have been funding them for a while, and some of the details that we've had recently in the last couple of months with specifically, for instance, the Vulcan files, where it came out that a legitimate information security company in a particular country who may or may not be having some kind of altercation with another country nearby up in the northern part of the hemisphere who speaks Cyrillic, utilize them to build and manage a lot of their tools that they use to break into things. And also allegedly have been, you know, a good part of the training and have actually engaged in that facility for that nation state. Now, the question I have before I hand it over to the wonderful world of Chris and Ian is that in warfare, you have certain domains. You know, you have land, which is where you were, Chris. You have sea. You have air, which is Ian, who was part of the RAF. I'm going to let them argue over who was better and who wasn't. But there's been a lot of discussion for a long time now about the fourth domain, which is cyberspace. Now, in some countries, they roll it into like the Navy or they roll it into the Air Force, you know, and it seems to be evolving to the point where it's actually kind of becoming its own kind of area now. I see a lot of talk that it's being pulled out of the various different domains that it originally sat in because it's become so important. But the question I have is, I mean, we have people like the Wagner Group. We all know who, you know, the details between them recently, who get paid by nation states to go and get involved in altercations with other locations. And I'm not stupid enough to think that there's a lot of other similar types of groups around the world who deal in the same kind of way with countries in the Western world and potentially, you know, obviously countries in other parts of the world. And obviously, they tend to share locations as well. Now, are we looking in the future at the popping up companies like the one outlined in the Vulcan files, or Vulcan, as they were called, but in the Western world? Or is it already happening?
It's definitely already happening, isn't it? Even from many, many years ago, just sending out bots on marketing and bits and bobs and getting people's opinions and trying to sway votes and the bits and bobs and having an impact on social engineering side that's come from a nation state. You know, I'm not saying it's true or no one knows, but the elections, US elections, mm-hmm. heavily reported to be infiltrated by our friends up north and swayed votes and swayed this and swayed the whatnot. So it's definitely happening on a social level, which we can see, as opposed to no government's going to kind of admit that the national grid's been hacked by a mercenary group living out of a basement in Chiswick. I don't know why I picked Chiswick, but
hotbed.
Yeah, unfortunately, Chris is right. It has been going on for years and years.
Sorry, the internet cut out. Yeah. Can you say that again?
Chris is right to an extent.
You can never quite let him have it, can you?
No, God, no. I'm trying to think. Like, it's been going back since the late 90s when it's all kind of come
internet came to from fruition from there. So you've got like things like, was it Kosovo? Like in the early 90s, they were the NATO's public affairs website was taken down, although not related to Kosovo, it was sympathizers and stuff like that. So you've got state actors using mercenaries or, you know, hacker groups and stuff like that to push their information operations. I think it comes under the banner of cyber warfare in terms of like that through that channel as well. So, I mean, if you look at it, it still follows the same TTPs of traditional land warfare, but they just, as in, use mercenaries when you can, although a certain red state, that didn't work too well. But yeah, it's still the same premise. It's just a different plane, to put it as. So it's not the physical, it's more the digital. That's what is happening.
But they do turn that digital into physical, don't they? And you can do so.
Yes.
So let's look at the what's the big one there with HIC cameras, for instance. The backdoor that they just found into HikVision cameras.
Yeah,
that are plastered all over our government all over our government buildings. And then you've just got a mercenary group from China, let's say, I think, maybe, jumping ATP. In and just watching us and taking intel for no reason. You know, it could just be watching people walk into work, but that's, you know, you're going back to the Cold War.
You and you're watching people again.
I know. You're going back to Cold War tactics. Yeah, you're going back to Cold War tactics, but being able to use digital art.
Well, I guess in many respects, I guess the reason I ask is, I mean, you know, we've known for a long time now that certain nation states and a number of nation states have engaged criminal gangs to do this piece of work. But as we well know, a lot of those criminal gangs aren't particularly reliable at the best of times. And in a world where we do have far more reliable groups that could perform the same function, are we going to see, you know, militarization or private militarization of this particular space, the information sort of sphere, from legitimate companies? Because things like Vulcan, for instance, you know, we'll have to use them as the, you know, they're the main one we've had information about. They're doing business legitimately, allegedly. You know, they're doing business legitimately with key organizations within that region. And they've got all the same capabilities and could even be much better funded in a more legitimate fashion. Why wouldn't this be done elsewhere? I mean, obviously, leave the clandestine stuff down to the really stuff, you know, stuff you really don't want to get associated with, down to some of them. But you could easily kind of level a lot of the, what am I trying to get at? You can level the playing field quite a bit with, you know, a legitimate company who you can say, no, they're just here for defense. You know, we all know they're not. There's all kinds of defense. There's, you know, more passive defense where you sit there and you hope your defenses will hold. But then you have
proactive defense.
A more proactive defense, which is where you go out and you do them before they do you. You're the military guys. Come on, militarize.
Because it's such a vast network, every single person is digitizing. Everyone's online. Everyone's doing something that, you know, we can't go. We're not getting information by watching people. And because it's so big, I think that's probably one of the reasons to use mercenaries, is because if you have a section, or which we, you know, I'm sure they do have, that focus on targets A, B, and C. But what about the rest of them? How do we monitor them? And we get the cheapest possible people to look at as much information as physically possible. I'd say that was pretty much the bulk of it.
Basically, what you're saying is it's just the government being the government as per usual, whereas we don't have the resources or the funding to do it, so let's get a contractor in who's bidded the cheapest amount and will give us a shocking service in the process.
They'll give you a shocking service.
The trains, for example. It's the same principle.
Yeah, they're going to give you a shocking service, but they're going to give you a service where they're going to look at 10 million people as opposed to
provide that capability to hoover up that research and reconnaissance.
Yeah. And then move it on to the next stage that will filter out the drivel. And then the next stage will filter out even more drivel. And then by the time it gets to the RAF or the army or the cyber intelligence side of that, MI6 and whatnot, it should have been filtered out that much that it's actually worth looking at. Granted, with that though, you're going to miss. Then filtration levels have got to be I've got to be governed and run properly. And I think that's probably where the downfall is, the major downfall.
What you're on about there, yeah, it's the filter. So that's in the physical plane, where you're on about, or potentially, but then you think about it from the digital plane, two planes essentially. If you think about it, the law of armed conflict, which basically governs of how, when, and where you can strike. It's basically the set of rules of don't shoot people parachuting down because they're in a vulnerable state. But if they start shooting at you, fair game, shoot back. It's that type, those set of rules that are put in place. With the digital plane, though, whereas you can do a kinetic strike, you can do the BDA, the battle damage assessments and stuff like that prior a strike and say, yeah, there's no schools, hospitals, great, we're not going to affect any of that. The issue then with then, I've kind of got off track here, but the issue then with the digital, you don't know the full knock-on effect because you can't do the full BDA. If you knock down, say, the colonial pipeline, you know,
yeah,
that affected schools and it had a knock-on effect. And that is not within Lowick, I admit, your pesky people from red flag countries aren't going to fault that. But, you know, what you are going to invite is more of that activity by using the mercenaries and stuff like that, the guns behind, who technically, yes, the Lowick does actually, as does the Geneva Convention, still apply to them, but they're not going to give two hoots about it anyway. So you're going to have a bit more of a, if they're given free remit, whereas you're saying just gathering, but if at the end of the day, they're going to turn around and say, all right, you've chosen the targets, great, go do what you need to do. Take that nuclear power plant offline for 5 minutes or something like that, or colonial pipeline, you know, there's going to be more of that where it's going to fall within the lines of the LOAC itself, and it's going to end up harming the innocents as well.
Yeah, no, it is, but you're always going to get collateral damage within war. And although a physical war and a digital war are two totally separate entities, they're pretty much the same, aren't they? They have the same end goal. So using mercenaries to take down the UK, for instance. Okay, we're gonna focus on supply chain. We're gonna focus on national grid. So you get a mercenary hacker group. Can you infiltrate the national grid and shut down the power to the UK, which will stop any military will dampen any military invasion to wherever, you know, that's gonna. But it's also gonna affect schools and hospitals. But you're not aiming for that. But you can't have one without the other.
I'm trying to remember what LOAC says. There's a term, and it's measurable and proportional action. It's along those lines. So in terms of if you're going to do a strike, and that's the one issue you have with when you're conducting cyber warfare, be it from a mercenary or a national state, you can't always know what end result's going to be.
Yeah.
Because you don't know if you're going to, because if you sit with collateral damage assessment, I call it BDA, that's after, obviously. But doing the collateral damage, you can say, I'm going to say, plonk a great big bomb on this from the jet. Great. Happy days. Explosions this wide. It's going to affect this radius. It's going to be contained to here. There's no schools. There's no hospitals. It's definitely not that. It's a legitimate target. It's military use, etc. like that. You don't get that. Because you can say, yeah, we're going to do that. If you look at Stuxnet, you think about that, that was targeting one, was it a spin of, yeah, centrifuges just to tilt them off by a degree or something like that to then really mess up the centrifuge itself. That Stuxnet, the way it was written, it was self-propagating, wasn't it? So it just constantly was on the hunt for a new environment. I go, have you got the X, Y, Z? These are my parameters. If you have, great, I'm going to do my business and knock off the centrifuges. That itself is not within the Stuxnet. If you think about it, it's not within the LOAC because it's gone past that boundary of this is our target. We're actually after these set of centrifuges, but then it's self-propagated and it's carried on. And it ended up impacting businesses and stuff like that, didn't it? Because the way it kept going and going, that in itself falls out the bounds of the LOAC because it's not proportional and I really have to Google it, but you know, it's not down to the target. So back to the point of using Bob down the road, mercenaries type thing, you're going to get more, in my eyes, more and more of that type of thing happening, and it's going to hinder and hinder further down the line to more innocent people. I know.
Yeah, using mer-
you're always going to get collateral damage as part of war, which is, but got to take steps to minimize that. But they're not going to do that if they're doing it on the cheap, are you?
No, they're not. They're not going to say, okay, we can hit the national grid, but we can also isolate all the hospitals keep them up and running, for instance, and only hit government buildings.
They're just going to go national grid. Hopefully the hospitals have got the BCP in place.
But this is my point. There is the old saying, you know, you get what you pay for. Now, you know, I know kind of you've got Lockheed Martin, you've got a number of the big contractors in this particular space. They, you know, produce a certain type of bang-bang, or lots of different types of bang-bangs in lots of different types of ways. Why wouldn't they have units for sale to create either the software that can do what you've just kind of described, but in a more targeted way, you know, quality solutions and providing quality people? Because, and I'm trying desperately not to be unfair to the beloved governments out there, but let's face it, they don't pay as well as the commercial markets. They don't tend to get as good quality individuals with the skill sets that they're going to need without going to the commercial world and without providing a certain amount of protection to that commercial concern, whether they do it quietly, like in Vulcan's case, or whether they do it a little bit more openly. I mean, everybody knows that Lockheed Martin, Rolls-Royce, and so on and so forth all create different things that either go bang, or devices or vehicles, and there's a whole million companies out there that do it. And the government doesn't seem to, you were in the military, you probably know better than I do. They don't tend to scrimp quite as much as when it comes to, you know, when it comes to that kind of thing, as opposed to who's going to look after our NHS database, where you normally get someone like an organization who may or may not have found themselves in hot water recently because they didn't look after their defense in depth section that says third party and third party assurance, which, you know, for me was a bit of a laugh considering the amount of money they get from government contracts. Do you think they would go cheap with that? Because I mean, I kind of see it as if they're going with criminal gangs. They can't control, you can't control a criminal gang. You could say,
no,
go and destabilize this, or go and we'll pay you some money to go and, you know, cause havoc in this area. As Ian says, they're not going to give stuff about collateral damage. They don't care. They've just been paid a bunch of cash to go and do some stuff. Then there might be some leverage with people who are known to certain information gathering groups and sort of networks, spy networks, that kind of thing. But not all of them are going to be known, maybe some of the key ringleaders. Would it not be better to just create a purpose-built organization who can professionally do what you want to do, like Vulcan seems to be, to that particular state that we've been talking, or nation that we've been talking about? But for others, because there was an Italian company that was a hacker for hire group for nation states, wasn't it? They got called out. I can't remember the name of them.
Who did the Colonial Pipe with Dark Side, wasn't it? Wasn't they were called?
I think it's a defunct group now. They broke up afterwards and then reformed as something else.
Didn't they get actually caught Dark Side or something like that?
Was it Conti who, and then they split up? Because obviously we had the Conti files, which told us how criminal gangs kind of work behind the scenes, which was very much like an organization. You know, they had their own departments and everything. They had their own bloody HR people, which is quite laughable when you're considering what what they get up to and the areas that they kind of work in. But no, I just see that, you know, criminal gang, okay, yeah, you know, you're going to get some really good hackers in there. It's in their best. I don't like calling them hackers, they're crackers, you know, but for want of a better term. You know, you're going to get some really good talent in there, but you're not going to be able to control that talent. If you're kind of engaging in anything, you know, a cold type of engagement or an engagement of destabilization or misinformation. I mean, look at Cambridge Analytics, who were implicated in all the jiggery pokery around
2016, around the elections, turning 5G mums into Trump supporters and all that jazz. Yeah.
Yeah, and just ripping everyone's data, just taking it off and selling to the highest bidder, which I've got no problem with. Obviously,
I was about to say you're on board with that, though, aren't you?
But I guess in many respects, you know, when you look and you analyse the type of engagements that you're going to be doing when you're doing cyber warfare, you know, you're going to be preempting a lot of the more direct stuff with that kind of stuff, destabilising social infrastructure, seeding, so you know, seeds of dissent, that kind of thing. It's a lot easier to do that nowadays than it feasibly was, say, during World War II, where you'd have to send people in physically who would then cause havoc and what have you. Nowadays, all it takes is a number of people to put out a deep fake of, you know, the Prime Minister doing something terrible to a pig's head. Well, I don't actually know that actually happened.
That was real.
Yeah,
that was real.
You know, but a not deep just fake.
A Black Mirror.
All I'm saying is you want a professional service, and if it means a lot to you, you're not gonna pay the clandestine people. You're going to pay the people that you know are going to do what you want them to do when you want them to do it. Or am I completely off? Because, I mean, if you were to go and get the services of a traditional mercenary group, like the Wagner group or whatever, I'm not having walked in that circle.
Great catering. Isn't that how they started, as a catering group? Something, and
then just a hot dog vendor
or something like that, and then they end up becoming like one of the largest mercenary groups in Russia. It's crazy.
50,000 people.
I presume you go in, you have a chat with someone, you say, this is what I want done. I want some protection when I go through here, or I want you to go and, you know, if you're a nation state, I want you to go and support these troops over there. They will then come back like any company and say, okay, that'll cost you X amount with this amount of soldiers, this amount of kit, this amount of support, yada yada yada, and all the rest of it. You pay your money and then they go and do what you pay them to do, maybe with a bonus at the end of it if they do it well. Is that roughly what occurs?
Pretty much. I mean, I would probably move away from the Wagner because that didn't go according to plan.
No, obviously, but a mercenary, any mercenary group.
We'll just take Libya in the last 20 years. How many different rebel groups have the US and UK government backed to overthrow the government regime and then gone, yeah, that well done, thanks for that. Oh, actually, you're not very good. We need another rebel group now and we'll back you. And then until they find the one they want. And that's not, you know, that's pretty sure that's public knowledge, unless someone's been living in a cave, literally.
Yeah, no, it just seems to me that, you know, if you're going to be doing this kind of thing, you're going to have the reliable people and the people who just sow chaos. And you're just going to go to the people who sow chaos and say, here's a load of cash, just go and cause trouble. Just go and cause as much trouble and as much noise as you can. Try not to get caught. See you later. Take your 10 million quid.
Yeah, but also if you do get caught, they're nothing to do with you.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a great way to use lightning.
But then surely you're going to have the more professional precision groups, because if you can't attract that talent, you're going to have to get that kind of talent elsewhere. And whilst you will maintain a cyber security division, for instance, as I said, you know, they're normally, and pardon me if I'm wrong, but they're normally youngish individuals who are serving for a certain period of time. So they'll get their training during their service. And then when they come out into the commercial world, they have to have additional training to then sort of skill up to the level that's required out in civvy street. Yeah, I'm about to get beaten up by a load of ex forces for saying that. But
no, not at all. But I think using mercenaries is going to be in the digital side is exactly the same as the physical side. They are the cannon fodder. They're going to go and find you. They're going to cause chaos. They're going to find you vulnerabilities. That then, when the vulnerabilities are found, that's when, again, we filtered up. So we found a vulnerability. Now we hand it over to the professionals to try and infiltrate that vulnerability properly, as opposed to just causing the chaos. And they're going to sit on the wings.
I suppose you're going to have your tiers, shall we say, mercenaries of guys who are actually going to go out and do. So at the bottom, you'll have your lower hackers and all that jazz, you know, the ones that you just give 100 quid to and go forth and go. Then you'll have your lights of flight. That's all known, proper, well organized, which they all, some of them really are. And they all, as you said, have their own HR and stuff like that. Things like Cozy Bear, the APT-29, they went after the COVID-19 research, rushing back to try and get their own up according to the press before, I guess. Yeah. They are higher tier. They're more organized. They know what they're doing. And you're going to use better quit organized mercenary group, cyber group, to actually go out. And a lot of these guys, as you said, have come out of the forces and then gone, right, I know we use these guys commercially, right, I'm going to see if I can get into that group and then get paid from them and then scale up that way. And it is, to be honest, it's like any other person coming out of the horses. You're going to use your connections and what you're good at, what have you done in the past, to then go work at, I don't know, like Raytheon or, you know, the arms users for those, you know, for the military industrial system type thing that you're in part of. So it's no different. It's just literally a different like plane of operations at the end of the day.
Yeah, you can hide behind a keyboard as opposed to hiding behind a mask. I think that's pretty much the only difference.
Yeah.
Oh, do you think that, like, you know, the big contractors in this world are skilling their people up?
Certainly. Definitely.
Yeah?
Yeah. You know, otherwise, you're just going to have churn all the time. It's like running a business, isn't it? You don't want to lose your good people. So you want to upskill them, make sure that they stay, give them the support and stuff like that. They are run like businesses, these big old mercenary groups. So you are going to ensure that they've got the right equipment, the right skills, the right tool sets for doing these kind of operations. It's in that organization's benefit for them to be better. It's also that means you get more lucrative contracts as well. You can be trusted again. It's all about building trust, isn't it, at the end of the day, with your client. It's a client at the end of the day. It just so happens to be a nation state.
Mm-hmm.
It's no different.
Sort of plausible deniability.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got plausible deniability. Also, if the UK government, for instance, I don't know, using Cozy Bear, I know it's Russian, but if they say, right, you're the best out there at the moment, we're going to pay you and we'd like you to look at this, look at that, look at that. While they're looking at that, looking at that, looking at that, and you're paying for that, they're not looking at you. They're not trying to infiltrate you. So I suppose it's a way of defence.
A really good example of this is the Georgia South Ossetia thing. I think we talked about it in a previous podcast. It's just all Georgia was like, was one of the first countries to be online. Everything was done that way. When was Georgia? Was that 2005 or 2007 when South Ossetia happened? But they were one of the first nations to really embrace the doing your government online and everything like that. It just so happened when the Russian tanks rolled across that border, everything went down and the Russians went, not us, South Ossetia sympathizers, not us.
This is part of the problem. Again, I'm going to be in trouble with that particular red flagged country, but they said the exact same thing though about the doping, didn't they, with the
they're always going to say it, though. No, it's the ultimate get-out clause.
We didn't do it, even to the point where somebody was going, you know, somebody had actually owned up and said, no, this is
And you
done.
Know they've been paid through, like, Cayman Island accounts from another account to another account. So to try and trace the money is poor.
Why bother? If you're using one of the big defence contractors anyway, it's a line item, isn't it? You can say, okay, we'll put down that we bought 10,000 ground-to-air, bang-bangs. Rather than you giving us the bang-bangs, we'll just, say we fired them off in anger at a tree stump somewhere out in Botswana.
One ballistic missile costing 50 million. No one's even going to look at it.
Well, it's just one amongst many that can get lost. Yeah. When in actual fact, they're paying for a group of skilled cyber mercenaries, there's a cool term, cyber mercenary to... work hard to kind of get into the banking institutions within that particular geographical organization, maybe change a few figures, maybe add do the old Superman 3 favorite one with Richard Pryor, which is, take all the half pieces of currency and just amalgamate it all and pay off another group. But, you've got to watch out when using criminal gangs anyway, because if you are, a Western country paying off a red flag based associated gang, then what's to stop them from just taking your money, doing what you ask them to do, but then turning around and say, okay, by the way, guys, give us some money, otherwise what we're going to do is we're going to tell the whole world that you just paid us to go and attack yada yada. They're not a reliable mercenary group. They're
criminals.
Well, they are, yeah. They're not going to be honest, are they? To be honest, they'd be a bit crazy to do that, I suppose, because then it puts you on a particularly large list of people who are going to go and get a nice orange jumpsuit and wind up somewhere in a hot, humid climate being beaten with bamboo sticks or something. But, yeah, if they never leave Russia, they're not going to give us stuff.
Yeah, true. But I look at the dark side, guys, at the colonial pipeline. The DHA, US DHA, actually said that they managed to receive a significant portion of the ransom payment back because they found their crypto wallet or something like that.
Oh, yeah, whatever.
They seized it, so it's kind of like, but that's not going to really do much.
I think one of the things that I laugh quite a bit about in this space is the amount of information you don't get and the amount of misinformation that's around there. You know, let's move over to that sort of briefly. It's like, look at the various different well-publicized security breaches recently where they say, oh, it was only 1,000 records that were affected. Week goes by. Oh, well, yes, it was 10,000 records that were affected. But, you know, you've got us, Gov, when somebody else goes, actually, no, it was 10,000. And then another 3 weeks down the line, it's, oh, well, actually, it was like, you know, 10 million across various different groups who deal with your TV licensing and deal with your forces recruitment and so on and so forth. But, you know.
Is it the Capital One, which is all the pension groups?
I wasn't going to mention the name because, basically.
Yeah.
You can get away with lying a little bit for that, can't you? Because it can be there was only 1,000 files that was taken, but within them files, there's another million files in each file.
But this is the other thing, you know, if they do get fined for that, it's not going to come anywhere close to the amount they've earned off of the full contracts that they've gotten anyway.
No.
You know, Cambridge Analytica. Once they started getting caught, they were really desperately trying to use their own, you know, their own methods they've been using to try to get themselves out of the out of the shit they'd put themselves in. Criminal gangs, they just don't care, do they? They're just going to do whatever and just say, yeah, all right, whatever.
Yeah.
And then occasionally you'll see the nation state that may or may not have funded them roll some bloke across a video camera and say, hi, yeah, we caught him. We caught the guy that did it. We caught the two. I think it was funny. They did a video breaking in some poor sod's house. It's like, yeah, we caught the three people doing it and we got their money as well. And there was like 10,000 rubles and three guys being lent on by some very nasty large military types who were obviously not treating them. We don't know who these guys are.
Yeah, so anyone working for the government, unless you are literally in the army or the navy or working for the intelligence, even the intelligence services have people that did go, oh no, we have no idea who that person is. They're worth runs. If you know something's gonna bite you in the ass, you're gonna use a third party as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, you're not gonna roll on the people who were the best at it. You know, I mean, let's face it. You know, the U.S. government have been well known for that. Look at Frank Abagnale. Who went and defrauded various different people, organizations for like tons and tons of cash, like hundreds of thousands, millions. And then they stuck him in, finally obviously caught up with him, stuck him in prison and just went,
do you fancy a job?
Helping us out, figure out how some of these people are doing exactly what you've just been caught. Yeah, sure, you know. He's in InfoSec now. He works on the board of a number of InfoSec things. I've seen an interview with him. He's really interesting. He did say that his life didn't quite go how it was portrayed in the film. There were a few things in there that were...
When they say crime doesn't pay.
This is it. I think
it pays quite lucratively.
But this is it. I think, unfortunately, crime doesn't pay if you're lower on in the echelons. If you're crap, you know, if you're not that good at it, then no one's going to care. You know, they'll catch up with you. I think in this case, they'll use your scapegoat and all the rest of it if you're part of one of these nation state associated criminal gangs. But if you're really, really good at it, they'll look after you. They don't want you going anywhere. They want you carrying on doing what you're doing.
Yeah, and that's what, like I said before, if you're paying the best that's out there or one of the best that's out there while you're doing that and you can monitor it, they're not attacking you. So it's a defense mechanism straight off.
But then there's also, I mean, because this is where the Conti files kind of showed what, you know, happened there. And I'm sure one of the viewers will tell me if I'm wrong. I think what happened there was some of the Ukrainian group members kind of got annoyed that the special operation was going off against them, and then proceeded to roll on the rest of the group. They got really disgruntled and then grabbed all the chat files, grabbed all the information, and that became the Conti files leaks. You're not protected from that in any way, shape, or form. I mean, if you were the UK government and you wanted to take a pot shot at another nation that you're about to go to war with, why would you use a criminal gang? Why wouldn't you use a more professional outfit? Why bother with the PR problems that come with it?
Because I think you can get rid of them PR problems, can't you? I mean, I could post online that the government have hired me to do X, Y, and Z, and they can just deny it. It's literally just my word versus theirs.
I suppose, but I mean, it's a little bit more difficult. They must have some kind of discussions and chats and chat. Any savvy cyber mercenary, let's term it as that, is going to make absolutely certain anybody asking them to do anything has all the chat logs, all of the stuff ready to go in a little encrypted package that should they get rolled on or thrown under the bus, they can say, right, actually, screw you guys, I'm going to release that and let everybody know what you've been doing.
Yeah, but we're talking about cyber criminals, and we're just saying about, you know, you're going to pay the lowest common denominator and say, right, this is all it is, and they're not going to have that. Nor are they going to want to jeopardize, and if they get found out with any recordings or bits and bobs, it's going to be controlled by, if it was me, I'd be like, right, okay, it's controlled on our side. We control the talks, we control what's going into it, we pick the venues, we pick this. So you've got no way of, you have no hard evidence that this ever happened.
Suppose you'll have middlemen, won't you? Is that how it works in the real world?
Yeah. So, you know, Richard Sunak's not going to knock on Wagner's door, is he, and say, oh, mate, no. You couldn't lose a favour, could you? Any chance of whacking some tanks and rolling up to Moscow? You know, he's going to have people that don't, no one cares about that. They're raft. They're going to ask them.
I don't think he's capable of doing that anyway, is he? You know,
no, to be fair,
that seems like a lot like hard work, mate, and getting out of my hotel group. So, no.
He's got plenty of meetings where he's got to, you know, whack up that old interest rate as high as possible to deal with the old printing of that quantitative easing issue that's still going on. You know, and saying, everything will be fine. Don't worry, your mortgages will all be good.
Yeah, just stand your ground. Yeah, thanks, mate.
I mean, to be fair, he is standing his ground, isn't he? Because I think he's just lost in shares, what I mean, just 10 million off the 400 million he's worth wise. You know, so
must bite really hard there. But
So I think he's going to drop. I think this week he's going from Waitrose maybe to Sainsbury's. That's what it is.
Oh, it must be terrible. Must be terrible. But then, I mean, you know, do you? I mean, obviously, we're coming up to the end now. There's been a lot of back and forth about. Kind of this. Do you think this is a thing going forward? Do you think there are going to be purpose-built cyber mercenaries who are going to band together and say, right, we're not going to do crime, or we might, you know, we're only going to do attacks for money.
Contracts.
Yeah, you know, you contract us to do that, and if you're part of this group of countries in this kind of region, if you're a NATO country or if you're a BRICS country, you know, let's be fair, it'll be all kinds of people, you know, we'll do your work for you, so you can deny all knowledge of it, but it'll cost you this and a bit of immunity.
100%. I'd be surprised if it's not already in full fruition. Not even just like the tip of the iceberg sort of thing. It's got to be happening properly deep, and not just against not nation states against nation states, in house as well. Political party versus political party. They must be doing the. Surely they've got the same thing.
Well, I mean, you know, I suppose at the end of the day, if a newspaper can pay a group of similar individuals to spy on people's phones, either through some sort of software or hardware-based, you know, thing.
What was it, News of the World? News of the World. Yeah, the Kybox now, anyway. Yeah, exactly. And
they ran away and closed down before they could get horribly, horribly sued, let's be honest. Well, I think they still did, but...
In fact, one of the reporters that was doing it, he now does talks at InfoSec type events as well. Yeah, so he goes into how they did it and what they were doing and stuff. It's really interesting, actually. Was he at InfoSec or something like that? I saw him at once.
And that's the way it works, isn't it? So who owned it? Was it Rupert Murdoch owned it?
Yeah. Who else?
Doesn't he own everything?
Yeah. So, I mean, we're going to do this for this government. If you get in government and you back us, we'll do this. Thanks very much.
So do you reckon the same group are going to be doing corporate stuff as well then? Because, I mean, if you're going to be doing this for a nation state, you've already got a certain level of immunity that you're going to negotiate there as part of your contract for doing that kind of thing. Is the next step on the side of things when you're not engaged with that, you're doing paid for corporate espionage? Because we know that goes on, you know.
Yeah.
Do you reckon the same groups are going to be doing the same thing? I mean, because that is criminal, but it's
the same business though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the same business at the end of the day. It's a different client. And yeah, there's more risk to it doing that if you get caught, but why not? Because if the operations around it and the way that you go about it, pretty much the same, isn't it? You just lift one set of procedures to the other. It makes sense to as well.
I'd say it was slightly less risk. If I'm an amazing hacker and then I'm working for the UK government trying to hack into a Russian state, for instance, and the Russians catch me, I'd rather much be done for corporate espionage and spend 5 years in
a
prison. Yeah. Spend 5 years in a UK prison than I would be in an orange jumpsuit somewhere and going all day.
But we have reached a point where it's so lucrative now to be an InfoSec, whether you're on one side or whether you're on the other side. I suppose if you're on the more larcenous, not so legal side, you're probably going to get paid a hell of a lot more. But
yeah, but then you've got the risks that come with it, haven't you?
Well, you just become a cyber mercenary and then you just technically work for a government and you get covered by them. Just don't go anywhere that somebody can send you to a country you don't want to go to.
Just go to a country with no extradition. Yeah.
Or maybe it'll just be done through the existing mercenary groups that already exist. They've already got their own hacking department.
You'd like to think that, well, not like to think because that'd be a terrible idea, but from a business point of view, as a mercenary group, you know, if I was in charge of a mercenary group, I'd be like, right, we need to get a cyber division up and running here, and we can do this, and we can push this out as a, not only can we storm cities with our tanks and cause a bit of havoc, we can also shut down grids and mess around with pensions and bits and bobs and really cause a bit of havoc to the highest bidder against wherever you want to send us.
I'd attack Ian's crypto wallet.
I don't have one.
What?
Well, yeah, no, feel free.
Yeah.
I'd like to see how far you get. Because if I've got one, tell me.
What kind of techie are you? Don't have a cyber wallet, damn you.
Because I'm a techie that's paranoid of people.
Wow. Anyway, we're reaching to the top of the hour. It's been an interesting but lively debate. And I don't think we've really come to a conclusion really at the end, other than it is bound to happen. But whether or not it's going to be quiet, small groups behind the scenes or groups like the Vulcan group, maybe it will come out that there are a couple out there a bit like the Vulcan group in this
yeah.
I think it'll be quiet for a long, long time unless something big gets hit. Because it's not like a physical mercenary group where you can see them. They're not blowing anything up. Nothing's going to go bang for people to actually notice. So if a government gets hacked or something happens, unless they shut down the national grid, unless the collateral damage that comes with it, they can pretty much hide it away, can't they?
Hmm. Well, that's the danger of cyber warfare, isn't it? You can see a burning building. You can't see a digital infrastructure that's been compromised until it's too late.
Yeah, and then when it is compromised, if it's going, you know, I'm sure the press side of that government will be like, okay, what's this going to cost us to admit this? Can we literally just sweep it under the carpet and try and fix it? And 9 times out of 10, they can do that for a little bit. And then when it does come out, they've already gone, oh, this did happen, but don't worry, we fixed it all. And everyone goes, okay. Because we know no better. There is nothing on fire. We cannot physically see anything on fire. So everyone goes, okay.
It's a good business to get into. Because you've got plausible deniability. Yeah.
Ian's like, right, how can I do this, you know?
Yep. That's good for sale.
One of my former consultants. We will have a discussion. Right, okay, fantastic. Well, thank you, Ian. Thank you, Chris, my beloved co-host. I always enjoy these lively debates where both of you have a poke at one another in a friendly sense. Well, not that friendly, but... Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic to be sitting down and having a chat with you guys. So look after yourselves and we'll be back soon.
Thank you for listening to the Razorwire podcast. If you like the podcast, if you love the podcast, please feel free to subscribe. And if you have any questions, please get in touch. Thank you very much and have a great day.